Welcome, friends. Sharing with you from a home in Moon Lake, North Carolina. I wonder how often we let ourselves think about the relationship between what we think, what's moving in our minds, and the way that we imagine the future. Specifically, the almost necessity to perpetually imagine the future and how that links with money. What is money really, if you consider it in the domain of time, right now? Isn't it really the determiner of what you will use your time for? Have a savings, then you might be able to say next month, next week, next year, I will take this holiday or this trip with people I love or meet people I love. Moment by moment, if you have very little money, you would be saying, the options for my future, what I can allow myself to imagine in the future is narrowed. It's narrowed because almost any option you can imagine in this world, this outer world, is determined by time, and taking time and having time is something that money gives us. Money gives us time. People with great wealth can imagine many, many futures. Hypothetically, they can imagine it on their yacht, or they can imagine it in their second or their third or their fourth or their fifth home, maybe on some island someplace. Not only that, they'll imagine our future, yours and mine, with the industries that they are invested in or have created. Or people with money will create the futures of the laborers in other countries by perhaps limiting the amount of money those laborers receive, and so that they don't have the ability to imagine a broad, diverse future, but only the sense of having to work, needing to work for basic things. Now consider the future of people in, let's not even go to poverty, but let's go to near poverty or just above the poverty level as it's sometimes written about here in the United States. You are perhaps having to work two jobs. Perhaps you're married. And I want us to think about a child and the future, the possible future of a young child whose mother has to work two jobs. And so the child is in daycare or with relatives, and that can be across a spectrum of good to not so good. And maybe the parents are together, maybe they have a good relationship, but the father also works two jobs. And so the child is growing up with a great deal less time, perhaps, with their parents, under the care of other people that the parents have only limited influence over or control over. And the options for the child's future, in terms of education, and in terms of time to play, in terms of security and safety, are being determined by, very concretely, the financial necessity of the lives of the parents, who want to bring love and possibility to their child and children. And so if you are for a moment one of those children, you have no idea how much money is determining your future, how money determines the time for your parents, how money determines the limitation of the time you get to spend with them. And then we have the question of whether you and I and society as a whole wants to try to give those parents more options to spend, in the most positive sense, good, healthy time with their own children. In other words, do we pay people enough? Will we give them enough money, enough energy to control time sufficiently that they can spend time with their children? So here we have two extremes, where the wealthy can afford to give their children the best. The poor cannot, where you have children who are raised with the notion of infinite possibility, many possibilities, all kinds of options, and children who are raised with a much more narrow spectrum of those kinds of possibilities. And yet, we then have to speak of the innate nature, the essence of any soul, any individual. There are going to be individuals who are raised under circumstances where they lack so much and still are going to excel in the world, at least in the way we often measure the things of the world. That is, they'll rise to the ability to have wealth. And if they have wealth, they'll be able to imagine all kinds of futures, a future of whatever the society seems to give value to. If it's property, a future with more property. If it's time off, a future with more time off. If you're an artist, it's a future with more time for creation, more time for exploration of your gifts. And if you are you listening to me, how much does money play into the way you imagine your future? And what is the foundation of what you imagine? Is your future determined by the vacations you can have, the holiday you can have, the parks you can visit, the places you can travel? Or is it determined by your relationship to whatever you're experiencing right now, so that you are sure that as you live your life in each moment, you'll meet that moment quite independent of the kinds of freedoms or limitation of freedom that your financial circumstances dictate, but that rather you will meet that moment with the kind of freedom that comes from the ability to say yes, to hold uncertainty as the possibility of a form of love and fullness that you haven't yet explored, to hold the unknown as a disguised form of the oneness, wonderment that is every moment of being, even a disguised form of love, part of the coherence of love, to have uncertainty. We're all going to age. We're all going to lose certain capacities and faculties of physical strength and mobility, gradually and steadily, and in many other ways. And what have you been doing? Is your life that determined by what your mind can imagine because of the money you have? Or is your life determined by your relationship to what you choose? If you're choosing to love love moment by moment, then you're choosing to set aside any form of division in your thinking that closes your heart, that contracts you, that activates a negative kind of churning, agitation, wanting, dissatisfaction. There are sensations like dissatisfaction. Are they going to drive you to make more money, to have the things that you imagine give you satisfaction? Well, why not? But are you going to have satisfaction that way? Or is the dissatisfaction a sensation that you'll get to play with, discover, feel, and relax with? Money and time and freedom, they're all linked. But freedom is a choice you make in relationship to your own thinking and beliefs. And no one can steal the future from you. Circumstances like the recent hurricanes or the storms or the floods all over the planet that take away the life the form, the home of a person. In essence, stealing the future, diminishing options of the future. If you are an individual with a deeper ground in yourself, that would not be an easy circumstance, but you wouldn't necessarily be dislocated from your capacity to help others, to see others, to feel compassion, to reach out a helping hand within the limits of your capabilities, and in that sense, to make the present moment alive and sweet, as coherent with love, as much a part of the coherence of love as you can make it in that moment where your future was taken out from under you in terms of your house or where you live, and in sometimes really, really lonely, painful ways, as when families are divided. Look at the way the future gets stolen by war, by political conflict, by economic, socioeconomic upheaval. And yet the future can't be stolen from you if your relationship to the present has a deeper and deeper ground. So think about that. Think about how you already anticipate the future when you turn this recording off and 5 minutes after that, and maybe the meal tonight or the shopping or the errands and the planning. The mind constantly in the future, it needs a future. It needs to believe somehow that it's holding onto a coherence in time with a future that you may never have. Of course, we all know death can come. The point is, the most important death is your surrendering of the division of your own mind in this moment and the realization that, yes, there is an inherent sense of future that you're always building, but it can't be stolen from you, because the foundation of that future is your relationship to your feelings and your thoughts and every moment of engagement with life, with your perceptions, with what you hear, with the mind that is there, not divided in the hearing, with what you see and the undivided mind with which you're seeing. And as you look at another and you think of them, the mind does not divide you from them, but makes them a curiosity that you can't reach the end of, a fascination that delights you in some way, so that love flourishes. This is independent to some extent of money and the opportunities and options that it buys. And of course, you can have both, but if you have to have one, have that deeper ground in yourself. That's the first and most essential priority of a life. Learn to live in that deeper ground of yourself.